Like our next speaker is Bernadette, who many of us know, and really looking forward to the to her presentation.
Correction, Les, it's Danielle.
Oh, what did I say, Bernadette? That's because I enjoyed listening to Bernadette so much. Our next speaker is Danielle, right? Danielle, looking forward to it. The topic is how service strengthens my OA recovery. All right. Danielle, you have the floor.
Hi, everybody. My name is Danielle. I'm a compulsive overeater like you. I'm from Central New Jersey. I ate like you guys. I know what it's like to be consumed with the food, every waking thought, and feeling like I'd never be free. I know what it's like to have a hope of a start to put it down, only to wind up in the same place, completely demoralized, embarrassed, ashamed. I know what it's like to hate not just my body, but even deeper, to hate myself because I couldn't stop eating. And I know what it's like to feel disconnected from everyone. The purest loneliness is a loneliness that I think only an addict knows. And I get such relief when I talk about it in these rooms because I'm not weird. I'm not a monster. I'm just like everybody else. And I just have all these moments of, when I come here and I tell the truth and I listen to the truth. The way I found my recovery was through the practice of the 12 steps. It was taken through this work by somebody who'd been through this work. And I maintained this practice by actively working the steps in my life and with other people. And it's the only time I've ever had relief from food. Everything else was, it was like doing circles till I got dizzy and sick, right? It was just the same thing inevitably. And I got more and more hopeless, more and more jaded, but I feel a sense of peace and happiness. And I can find that peace and happiness in some very, very dark times. I will say that I've lived an imperfect program. There were times that I was playing fast and loose with the food. That wasn't wise. I don't recommend it. There were times I sponsored myself. I recommend that even less, if you can imagine it. And there have been times that spiritually I've done some things or I've caused some harms that it just didn't feel abstinent in the least, right? So I run a very imperfect program. And it's funny because when I sponsor other people or just talk to other people, we all feel like we're not, you know, we're kind of like, I shouldn't say we all, because I was just talking to a sponsee about this yesterday. You know, she was feeling like, oh, but I just feel like I should have it together at X years. And, you know, I laugh because I used to feel that way. And I know that recovery has brought me so much, but it's never risen me above the level of human being. It never will. You know, I'll always do those things that are thoroughly human. And some of the things that I do that are thoroughly human are a little ugly, a little embarrassing, right? But I try not to mark them with the binary of good and bad. They're sustainable and unsustainable. And when I move towards unsustainable, I'm moving away from God. God was that thing at the end of the 12 steps that brought me that sustained relief. And God is that thing that I can sink into every day. Sometimes I'm just in the car and I imagine God's with me. Or I wake up in bed and I smile and I just feel the presence of God. You know, or I have a busy work day and I have a little reminder. It's just a little heart that pops up on my phone. And it reminds me to have a little conversation with God. I have these touch points through the day and I get to access that now. So when I'm unsustainable, things I would have previously called bad, bad is something that gets me into shame. It gets me myself. When I think something's bad that I've said or done, I kind of get paralyzed and I don't actually work to change it. But when I look at that stuff without judgment, like it teaches us in our fact finding and fact facing inventory, I can move towards the sustainable, which is God. On one end, I have sustainable God, abstinence. On the other end, the end I don't want to go, the end that's cold and lonely, it's the food, it's the loneliness, it's the shame. So I know what I want to move towards today. I am more motivated to live a spiritual program of action. It's almost like I'm incentivized rather than shame. Shame never worked. If shame would have worked, I would have solved this problem on my own as a fat kid because that shame felt pretty horrible. And it didn't get any better. It only got worse as I grew older. The shame compounded on shame was worse and worse. So I know today that that's not what God wants for me. And I know it's not a solution that works. Anyway, while I've lived a thoroughly imperfect program, and I probably will continue to, not my goal, not my aspiration, I always aspire to better. I think the one thing that I have very much gotten right is that early in program, I heard people say, if you want to last with relief from this disease, you have to do service. And I believe that to the core of my being. I believed people who told me I would not survive without service. I believed our literature without question in that area that tells us that this is how I achieve and maintain recovery. I don't have to go backwards as long as I have this. Service gets me back to all the core principles. I can't do service over a long period of time and not experience God and not experience surrender. I can't work with other people and take them through the steps. That's my point. It's not to chat it up. You know, this isn't a quilting bee, right? Like, it's to take other people that I work with through our 12 steps. I can't do that without looking squarely at how am I living the principles, right? When I'm working with somebody and I'm doing that service, I ask myself questions like, hey, do I owe an amends? I'm taking this person through an amends. Is there something outstanding? Or the other day, you know, I am really, usually, really one thing I am hardcore about, it's doing my 11th step at night. Haven't been doing them. I'm like, oh, well, you know what? The days are really fast and nothing's really going on. Which those two things don't really make sense. But what happens to me inevitably, my sponsee does them. And it's a call to action by seeing somebody who wants it and is working it, right? I had another incident. I went on this wild road trip when I first went abstinent. I was like, let me go take it. It was just a bucket list thing. I started in Kansas and I went to Baton Rouge. And it was like, I had this week. It was one wedding to another. And I get to Kansas the first night and there's nothing going on the first night. The wedding's the next night. And there's nothing to do. I'm not really staying with anybody. I don't know anybody at the wedding. And I'm driving and I pass this thing and it says cowboy bar. And I'm like, maybe it's got cowboy food, right? Really, here's the deal with the cowboy bar, right? Like the big book tells me that I am safe any place when I have a good reason and I'm not trying to get my jollies living, you know, the vibe of the old days, which is definitely not what I wanted to do. Cause I remember thinking, they have something better than we have in Jersey. Right. So I'm thinking about the cowboy bar and realistically that could have sunk me in three different fellowships. Cause I was in three at the time. And I don't know, maybe got me murdered by a cow. I don't know what cowboys are like. Do they murder? I don't know. I know I shouldn't be in a cowboy bar. Shouldn't be there alone. There's just too many sticky places. I didn't have a good reason. There were plenty of places that I could have been. Anyway, I said, you know what? I'm not going to tell my sponsor because I don't actually need to. And then that little thing goes off and it says, that's bad that you don't want to talk to your sponsor about it. So I said, all right, I'm going to tell her I'm doing it. I'm just as long as I tell her I'm doing it, it's fine because I told somebody, right? So I go to text her. I'm like, there. And then all of a sudden, instead of my sponsor responding to me, the next person who texts me is my sponsee. And she says, what are you doing today? What are you doing tonight? And what am I going to say? Well, I'm going to a cowboy bar because I'm very special and different. You know, you're new. You have to do the new people stuff and you could never do what I'm doing. But here's the deal for me, when I work with them, there's just something in me. I can't lie. I really can't lie to anybody in recovery. When I have lied, it's almost like, It like stings. It used to feel like nothing. And now it's like, I definitely couldn't lie to somebody in service in program. It just would feel so yucky to me. So what comes back, I texted her and I said, I'm going to a meeting. And because I said it, I had to go do it. So the fact that I had a service commitment to this other woman inspired me to be better. I don't know. Maybe it saved my life. Maybe I'm being dramatic. I know it kept me out of harm's way, whether or not, you know, I made it through that cowboy bar or not. And, you know, like I've thought about it since. I don't think there's anything that great in a cowboy bar, right? Like, I don't know. It's probably dirty. Anyway, I had a better time at that meeting that I went to that night. That was really cool. I got some recovery. I got to be with my God. And I love it when my program kind of clicks. So I'm a messy human being. I'm still very self-centered. And I feel like I'm the only one who has a life and nobody else in the world has a life. And because I also have that belief, like I told you, that I have to do service. Service is like that little hook around my neck that pulls me back in, that kind of reels me in when I want to get too far away. And it's also the catch-all for me. I do service when I'm feeling any type of way. It could be super joyful. It could be super miserable. It could be super angry. I don't know why. For me, that medicine is one size fits all. It keeps me from eating, from raging, from doing a lot of the things that are going to set me back and make me miserable and maybe bring me to the food again. I don't ever want to go back to the food again, but I think there's a lot of misery in between now and going back to the food again. And I don't want to be on that bumpy road, you know, and I don't know how long of a road you have before you go back to food. So this year, this was a wild year. I lived like an entire decade this year. It started with like, I had like a bucket list vacation. I literally got cut in half and fused from my shoulders to my pelvis. I'm in two fellowships. I lost two sponsors in the same week. My entire network changed. You know, I was out of work for months. I ran for office. I bought a house. Now I started this crazy new job that's like the job of my dreams. And oh my gosh, I have to show up. And oh, I have two more surgeries before before the month is over. Nothing big, super little. It's just the point that, oh, and I'm prepping for a wedding. I forgot about that. And my grandma died and I was there. Anyway, yes, I got a lot going on this year, right? So times have been super joyful. Times have been super scary. Times have been pretty miserable. And I treated them just the same. When I was, this is the chair that I was in for the first portion, you know, after that surgery, I feel like I lived in this chair and the days were so hard. I would call my mom every morning and just cry because I was in so much physical pain. But darn it, if I didn't take service at meetings, you know, I still had sponsees. My sponsee said to me, is it okay if I call you? Do you want me to back off? What can I do? How can I be of service? I said, please let me be a sponsor because I knew that was what I was going to need to get through this. You know, I didn't give up my commitments. I take commitments in the groups when I'm part of them. I don't currently have a group commitment. I bet you somebody texts me after this, right? And I just bought myself a commitment. Oh, that's not true. I do have a group commitment. And it's very early in the morning. I work my service around my busy life. So I'll go to meetings at 7:30 in the morning, or I'll sponsor super early, or I'll stay up a little bit late, or I'll take calls, you know, in the car. I now have a commute after working at home for 3 years. And instead of being like, oh man, I gotta sit in traffic, I'm like, wow, here's time that's put aside. I can call sponsor and sponsees. And that's been pretty great for me. So my program gets to continue. I make time for service in this job. I may talk to people during the day. I've talked to sponsors during the day. Not that that's service, that's more of something that serves me, but I keep program through the day. You know, I make time, I sit down, I do intergroup commitment. And I'm the first one to tell people the story. I remember looking at intergroup stuff and not seeing why that was valuable and thinking I could do a whole lot better. So you know what? One day something clicked and it said, how the opposite of humble are you, right? Like, why don't you show up and put your hand out? And I did, and I fell in love with doing that kind of work. I have a commitment at Region. You know, I did it to be of service to the intergroup because I believe we need that, because that's the voice of our fellowship, you know, those reps, which is God as he expresses himself. So somebody has to show up at Region. Somebody has to show up at World Service, right? And boy, I went to be of service to the intergroup. And instead I come back from those assemblies and I am jazzed and I've met people. And it's like, I feel like, you know, Cinderella at the ball, as crazy as that is. I never would have figured. And I'll tell you, this year I went to Region kicking and screaming like, oh my God, I got so much going on. I can't do this. And boy, if I didn't come back, I couldn't wait to go back to Region. You know, I bet it'll be like that again in February too, because I know how I am. I forget these things very quickly. But the point I'm trying to make is that I make time for service. Like, I have a busy, busy life. And there are days that I will leave the house with the bed unmade, you know, dishes in the sink. I hate for you to know that, but it is what it is, right? But there's certain things I will never do. I don't care how busy I am. I'm not leaving my house without brushing my teeth. There are some things that are a standard. I'm not leaving my house without pants. I never get too busy to do certain core things of being a human being. And that's my service. I don't let go of my commitments, you know, because my life is busy and I bought a house or I'm planning a wedding. Right now, granted, I can't do a toxic amount of service because sometimes I've done the amount of service to drown out my feelings, especially in the beginning. You know, I use service to hide from my obligations outside. So it is a balance. It's not necessarily a balance I'm good at figuring out. So I talk to my sponsor about those things when something doesn't feel right, when I think I'm at that limit, and I see what I can do and I can see what the problem is. But service is the thing that keeps me, it grounds me, it gets me back to that center of spiritual living. Because I don't know what it is. I feel like I've been here a number of years. I know the stuff. I could quote our literature, but somehow I get disconnected from the spiritual program of action. And like I said, service is that hook that just keeps me back in. The only thing I've managed to do right was stay and buy into that message that if I don't do service, I won't stay. And if I don't stay, I won't survive. And I want to keep buying that message no matter how busy I get. Oh, it's funny though. You know, there's a lady that I heard from North Jersey. She really sponsors a lot of folks. And she talks about God's economy, how she tries to never, I don't think she ever says no, this lady. And she says, it's God's economy. If, you know, a bunch of people ask me to sponsor them, I say yes. And God works it out. And I know that's true. I had one week, bizarre, 11 people asked me to sponsor them. And if you've ever had people ask you to sponsor them, you know, you don't always hear from them a second time. It is what it is. You know, that's what our disease looks like. And no, I didn't wind up sponsoring 11 people, but I said yes 11 times and it all worked out. And, you know, I would never sponsor somebody if I couldn't fairly give them what I had at the time I was situated so I could. And, you know, God's economy worked out. So I say yes as much as is humanly possible. And life just gets bigger and better. And I appreciate you guys even inviting me here because this is just another night. You know, I don't have to disappear into food alone and disconnected. I get to be present. I get to enjoy my life, you know, and I get to enjoy being with all of you. And I get connected to my God. You're the only way that a soul like me can hear God. I just am not good at sensing that presence. I'm not the Dalai Lama. Like, I need the megaphone that is you to hear my God. So thank you for allowing me to be part of this tonight. And thank you so much to the awesome Freehold Meeting for hosting and for our wonderful 12 step within community and everybody giving service today. God bless you.